Welcome, welcome, welcome to Staying Power, a show that is all about resilience. What it is, what it isn't, how do we know if we have it, what do we do if we realize we don't have as much of it as we would like, and anything else regarding resilience. What we do know is, in the end, resiliency is a choice. Joining me once again to talk about all of our experiences and our ideas about developing resilience is my friend, my colleague, my co-writer, my co-content creator, so many things. Tawny Santabria. Tawny, how are you?
I am doing well. I think I was well last week too. Springtime is bringing wellness.
Yes.
So lots of energy and it's great.
Yeah, my energy is up too. I think that's a good way to put it. High energy, wellness, kind of getting back out after the hibernation period, if you will, you know, is exciting and vibrant. So yeah, I am feeling the same. And such an important part of developing resiliency, getting out, movement, being in nature. I mean, these are all things that, so many different things about it. And for today's subject is something actually hits on all of those things, as well as some things we've talked about on other episodes. And it involves taking us around the world once again, like we did last week. But in lead up to that, when you think of convents, I know it's a weird question. When you think of convents and nuns, what images come to mind?
Well, that's a tough one. I don't know that I really think about that very often.
Okay.
I don't know that I can say that I have given it a whole lot of thought.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I realize it's a bit of a strange question. The reason why I ask it, though, to not keep you in suspense, is because today's story is about a group of Buddhist nuns, 400 Buddhist nuns in Nepal. Okay, all women, all of them ranging between the ages of 9 years old and 70. Okay, and I'll get into the specifics in just a minute. They're from one particular sect of Buddhism. There are, of course, dozens upon dozens of different sects in Buddhism. And they are very unique, though, in as Buddhist sects go, because their primary means of focus, besides meditation, prayer, doing all the daily responsibilities that a convent requires, or nunnery in this case requires, the thing they focus on is kung fu. That's why I was asking, did you ever associate kung fu with nuns? I never had before I encountered this story. And they were a bit of a sensation. They had kind of a 15 minutes of fame, if you will, back in 2015 in Nepal, when there was a massive earthquake there. And that is not a country full of modern infrastructure outside the capital of Kathmandu. And so when there are catastrophes there, a lot of people can be cut off from aid. A lot of people can, as a result, suffer and die in the aftermath of something like that. And so it requires a bigger response than simply just the standard international response of airlifts and bringing in supplies and people raising money and that type of thing. And in this case, as well as in many others, the so-called Kung Fu nuns became a little bit of an international sensation, and they've stayed that way to a certain degree. They also assisted during the COVID crisis in getting medicine and information out to far-flung areas of Nepal, in some cases hiking several hundred miles to get to villages up in the highest elevations to let people know what was going on and to provide communication and that type of thing. But what I find interesting about them, the kung fu piece, yes, but there's more to it than that. They're known to throughout Nepal as the Fearless Ones, okay? And the majority of them are from areas in the Himalayas, northern India, Nepal, what is now, you know, Tibet, which is part of China. They're all from there, and for the most part, all of them have personal stories of displacement, being pushed out or, you know, being run out of town or not being safe for them to be where they are. And of course, they ended up here where they can get education, food, purpose, that type of thing. And as I said, there's about 400 of them. They're from the Drukpa lineage of Buddhism, a sect that started about 1,000 years ago when its founder, who has a title, a holy man, kind of like the Dalai Lama does for his sect, called Gwailong Group, Drukpa, is supposed to have witnessed a miraculous flight of 9 dragons in the Himalayas. And that sort of founded that. And that's a story for another time. I want to know more about that one. But nevertheless, that's when it was founded. And Kung Fu became this important part of their rituals only in the last 30 years. Because traditionally in Buddhist societies or in Buddhist religious structure, women did not have active roles in anything, right? They weren't allowed to run chants. They weren't allowed to do writing. They weren't allowed to debate philosophy for a really long time, generally speaking. Some exceptions, but generally speaking. About 30 years ago, the 12th incarnation of the Gliawang decided that he was going to change that, and he was going to allow women in this order to do all the things that men had been allowed to do traditionally and then some. And part of what they ended up adopting as a, not just as a self-defense tool, which could be important for them, depending on where they were, but also for the discipline and the practice and the focus and many of the intangibles that we talked about last week, right? With things that they would learn Kung Fu. And at the same time, they would then emphasize also social responsibility, serving others, right? Pretty common thing that we hear with religious orders like this. And to be, if you're an expert in Kung Fu in this, you're called a Jigme. That's the name. So everybody has a name, Jigme something, right? And when they first came to light, when the 2015 earthquake happened, they became a bit of a sensation because they seemed to be known in so many places in Nepal, and they were treated differently by their male peers in other Buddhist sects and elsewhere because they knew Kung Fu. Which I found very interesting. So they have very deliberate, very packed daily schedules. They're up at 3 a.m. They do prayers and meditations early on. There's a religious service early in the morning. They have their morning meal. They do their work. They practice Kung Fu up to 4 to 6 hours per day. But they also do gardening. They do calisthenics. They do cooking for the community. And they do cleaning. They do all these various things. And their day ends at about 10 o'clock at night. Right? And so that's what their process is. But it includes all those things every single day. And so now to kind of put all this together. This order had, in Nepal in particular, had long set up things like schools, medical clinics, meditation centers, and had done them largely for girls for a very long time. When Kung Fu was allowed, and then suddenly the Gualong was allowing for them to study and debate philosophy and that type of thing, this whole thing just became even bigger in Nepal and in northern India. And they began in 2005 to run actual workshops for girls and women throughout northern India and Nepal and other places on not just Kung Fu, but all these different things that they would be able to do in a part of the world with real strict social hierarchies based on religious belief, a lot of tradition, cultural practice, and that type of thing. So in some ways, they were quite different from what was seen in most places. And they noticed that they were starting to be treated differently by their male counterparts. And when they went to various towns, they weren't harassed as much as they used to be. And other nuns in other sects started to thank them for their work, because they would go places and say, men don't want to mess with us now because they don't know if we're one of those nuns who knows Kung Fu or not. And so all of this together, when asked about this, the Gualong said the whole purpose of this was to build confidence and strength in people. And in this sect, women had not been allowed to do that. So confidence, strength, a sense of well-being, and a sense of asking the question, what is my responsibility to myself and to other people? Okay. And so acts of service and being out in the community turned out to be important. And so in both 2015 and then during the COVID crisis, this group was one of the first to volunteer and connect with aid organizations to bring aid assistance to areas that had been hard hit by both of these things. And there's a number of stories of these, of villages miles and miles and miles away from the nearest road with no electricity, no news, no nothing, but reliant on things like maybe a local airfield to bring in things, or the pathways through the mountains that might be cut off. Story after story of the first people arriving in their villages with information and with aid and with a plan were the Kung Fu nuns, bringing in packs full of food and supplies and medicine, acting as translators for organizations coming in with perhaps a little bit more resources available to them, being able to lead groups into the mountains, knowing the areas well enough to get people through them, to pull people out who were injured and to get them to places where they could be airlifted to hospitals. The Kung Fu nuns seemingly were everywhere. There's only 400 of them, but they seem to be all over Nepal in both of these places. And for the most part, the Kung Fu nuns believe that they have been largely welcomed, and their different way of doing things has largely been welcomed in various communities that they're from, in some cases going back to the places that they'd once been exiled from and finding a large positive response. Not all the time, okay, but certainly a lot of the time. And because they have become so connected with international organizations and have developed a bit of a following, they have 175,000 followers on social media for their stuff. Because of that, they are sought out quite a bit, more so than a lot of other similar sects in Buddhism, for everything from leading workshops around the world to for interviews, for study, for people to go for retreats, that type of thing. And so they become, in a lot of ways, symbols for lots of different people in lots of different ways. And so that's kind of what I wanted to bring in today, was this Kung Fu nuns. One, because when I suddenly came across this story of Kung Fu nuns, I went, what is that? I got to know what that is. And what I found, again, with the discipline, with the focus, you know, it's a deadly martial art, right? It's one of the deadly martial arts, Kung Fu, meant for defense, right? First and foremost. But obviously, it's about so much more than that. And the effect, and for them, and perhaps for more people. So what comes up for you with that story?
Well, what initially comes up is the capacity, you know, we're looking at the capacity of the human being, mm-hmm. in community with other human beings who are working that same capacity, who don't give a whole lot of time to escapism and avoidance and entertainment and distraction. Mm-hmm. Look what can be done. Mm-hmm. Right, that's the first thing that comes to mind. Yep. When we waste a lot of time, we can't get a lot done. Mm-hmm. And when we don't waste a lot of time, when we are disciplined and we're training our vessel, mm-hmm. and with that comes attention and focus and the ability to withstand discomfort. Mm-hmm. Waking up at 3 a.m., going to bed at 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of withstanding, but they're doing that in community. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of time in the day, it sounds like, where they're doing their meditation, and it sounds like they're doing the renewal and the recharge, but they're also willing to be mm-hmm. uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And everything that they do serves a purpose, mm-hmm. as opposed to distraction or being entertained.
Yeah.
Right. Or spending a whole lot of time in the head, in the thinking space, mm-hmm. with the stories that of limitation and or of other things. So that's the first thing that comes. Like, there's a lot of human capacity if we train ourselves for it.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah. 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 To me, I had a similar thought. It's like this microcosm of really great stuff for the best of what human beings can do. I mean, to me, that's what really stood out. You said it much better than I could probably ever put together. But that part is great, because I noticed that too. It's a lot of activity. It's a full day, but it's got personal reflection and development. It's got physical movement. It's got community connection. It's got restoration and rest and contemplation. All good stuff, but you're right. There is no distraction and no indulgence either.
Yeah, that'd be the entertainment mm-hmm. piece. That's the indulgence, right? Mm-hmm. And so, not a lot of time for all of those kinds of things. And we think in our lives, we hear ourselves talk to each other and ourselves. I don't have time for that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. So when we put our mind to something, or we put our heart to something, we put our body to something, when we are so clear about our purpose, which I would imagine that there's a clarity around that, at least in the group community-wide sense.
Yeah.
And probably there's a lot of community focus mm-hmm. as opposed to individualized, sort of like, what's my own individual purpose? Like, how do I become successful? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of heavy duty community-wide, obviously, service to others. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of time to think about self in a way that is comparing.
Mm-hmm.
to our neighbor and to others. We just move through
mm-hmm.
what's required, and we gain strength and resiliency and connection and heart and community and service through that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I'm going to, as I do with all these things, I'm going to make sure that the links to what I found with this, including some really interesting videos where you can hear from these nuns themselves, I'll make these available in the show notes for people to look at. But that is all very clear and just radiates from them, right? That when you hear them talk, their focus right now is not a surprise with Buddhism, a focus on world peace. They're very strong advocates for that, as well as interestingly enough, green transportation. That's a big focus of theirs. But then also a real focus on letting girls and young women in the world. Talking with them about what they can do and how they can be, what they can focus on and their experience. And they do that mostly seemingly from sharing their experiences of before they came to the nunnery, what things were like and what things they discovered there and what things that they truly valued. And the underlying part of that is, as they say time and time again, A, the partnership of all human beings, and B, everyone can be their own savior. That's sort of their unofficial motto, if you will. And that's what they end up talking about most of the time. One of the things they did most recently after the COVID crisis abetted a bit, 200 of these nuns jumped on their bicycles and rode all through the mountain passes of Nepal, talking with people and villagers about environmental questions and the importance of nature and protecting it, climate change, that type of thing. And that drew a lot of attention and a lot of support to various organizations. And they did that to not only raise awareness among their own communities, but it also had the effect of helping these organizations that they know had helped other people in Nepal and northern India raise money for further operations later on. So just, again, Kung Fu nuns riding bikes through the Himalayas. That's such an interesting sentence to utter but it's also so quintessentially human. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's the Kung Fu and the nuns together that trips you up.
It doesn't trip me up.
Is that the thing?
No, it's just, it doesn't trip me up. I just think it's such an interesting juxtaposition that if it would have to be true, you know, because it would be hard to believe, and otherwise, right? It's one of those things where truth seems stranger than fiction, and to me, much more beautiful than fiction.
Right. But is that about conditioning, do you think?
Oh, I suppose it could be. Sure. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's nothing about nuns and kung fu on the face of things that would be contradictory.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just about what we've been conditioned to believe.
Right. Right. And what we've been conditioned to expect. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I was, I noted that too. It was like, oh yeah, my expectations are not met for this, or it's something that I never contemplated putting together. Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. Because there's nothing that should say that somehow is strange when it's not, And of course, when the founder or when His Holiness of this order decided upon this, right, decided to go this route, it was something for him that seemed to make sense. He said, we do this for people, right? People can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just hadn't been maybe thought about before.
Yeah, it wasn't conventional.
In that sense.
Yeah, it wasn't conventional. It wasn't the conditioned expectation. Absolutely. And that's always a reminder for me when I come across these things that surprise me. It's just, why does that surprise me?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so, right. And so it's interesting because we can be reminded by in so many places and in so many directions of how strong our conditioning is.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's an important thing, especially today when more and more really is possible, just by the way that we've set up our lives, more and more really is possible. But if we remain sort of like tied into our conditioning, then we're not going to be able to see that or be open to that.
Mm-hmm.
And for good and bad and all the things, like it doesn't have to be that, it's all good or all bad. It just, there's lots of different complexity and lots of different layers to all of this. Certainly. But I think that once we can get out from underneath, just the way we think things should be,
mm-hmm.
or the way that things, we should be, or other people should be,
mm-hmm.
We open up to so much more opportunity and possibility, right? Like, yeah, we can be capable of doing a lot of hard things. Mm-hmm. Riding our bikes through the Himalayas is mm-hmm. a human thing that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
are capable of doing these things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But then we get caught up in like, oh my gosh, how do they do these things? I could never do these things.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Even that is a conditioned response that can go through our head. But almost like letting ourselves normalize these things, even though we've never heard of them before. Okay, this is a new thing for me to hear, but of course, yes, of course humans can do this.
Yeah.
Right? It starts to reinforce for ourselves as individuals, even, or as small communities, that things are possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it first thing I thought of with the bike ride was like, I want to do that. I want to ride my bike through the Himalayas. Fun would that be? We always hear about Everest, right? I mean, it's people always climbing Everest, but the terrain there. I mean, Kathmandu, the capital, is at about a little bit higher than Denver, right? Like about the same height as Denver, about a mile high. But you go 25 miles north, and suddenly, you're pushing towards 20,000 feet. It's such an incredible incline there. And of course it's been famous for explorers and trekkers ever since. And it is one of my dreams. I'm kind of drawn to things about Nepal because one of the things I've always wanted to do is trek there between the tea houses along the various pathways. I have no desire to climb Everest. But to walk those paths, to see that part of the world, to see and connect with the people that are in that part of the world and who do this every day and who live this every day and see what to experience that normal for them is something for me that has always been an attraction since I was very young, as a matter of fact. And so I was delighted to encounter this story for a lot of reasons, as well as noticing that it did indeed take me by surprise when so much of what we talk about on this show is, why should this be all that surprising? This is what humans do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And And yeah, to your point, like that's part of the reason why we bring these life experiences is so that we can normalize them.
Yeah.
Sort of like, yeah, this is what humans are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're all humans.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's to me, that's part of the appeal of this too, is that that cuts across time, space, culture, practice, conditioning, you know, that's true for all of us. And we spend so much time because of conditioning, focusing on what is different, elevating things between this is better, this is worse, this is ideal, this is not, in some cases, this is right, this is wrong, that things like this that connect us and unite us through all those things, right? And particularly across time, space, history, all those things are such a draw for me. And that's why these kinds of stories I always like to bring. It's like the best part of my week when I get to just figure out what it is that we're gonna bring in and talk about this week. So I appreciate you highlighting these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're all in this together, mm-hmm. in some form or another.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to choose how we want to sort of view from our vantage point,
mm-hmm.
what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the more clearly we can see things,
mm-hmm.
better off we're going to be.
Yeah, yeah. Seeing things more clearly brings a lot more things into view, and focus, and you know what's possible, what isn't. To me, that's the gift of continuing to do this kind of work, if you will, around building resiliency.
And it makes things simpler.
Mm-hmm.
Really. We don't have to get tripped up on all the complexity, the cans and the can'ts and all of the things. It's just really coming back to foundationally, you know, being human.
Absolutely.
And what our capacity, what the capacity we have in that. So, yeah.
It's awesome. All right. Well, thanks, Tawny, so much for that. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. And thank you for listening to this episode of Staying Power. Remember, if you missed any of this episode or our other episodes, you can get this as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for subscribing, for reviewing it, and for sharing Staying Power with your friends, your family, your social networks, anybody you think would benefit from digging into these stories of resilience and their reflection, the reflections that we provide here. Remember, too, if you would like to support us further, you can check out our Patreon site, the Staying Power Network, and you can join that for free, or you can do a paid membership for a little bit more extra content. More content is getting added there all the time. We'd also love to hear your resilience stories, and you can email those to us or point us in the right direction at stayingpowershow@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and who knows, might even bring one of those on the air and talk about it. We will be back in a week for another episode of Staying Power. Until then, I am JDK Winnikin.
And I am Tawny Santabria.
Thanks very much, everybody.